"If it please you, my lord," she answered demurely. "What would please me would be the truth of you, girl."
"Aye, but that will cost you double."
Tyrion decided they would get along splendidly. "I am a Lannister. Gold I have in plenty, and you'll find me generous. But I want more from you than what you've got between your legs, though I want that too. You'll share my tent, pour my wine, laugh at my jests, rub the ache for my legs after each day's ride, and whether I keep you a day or a year, for so long as we are together, you will take no other man into your bed."
"Fair enough."
She reached down to the hem of her thin, rough-spun gown and pulled it up over her head in one smooth motion, tossing it aside. There was nothing underneath but shea.
"If he don't put down that candle, my lord will burn his fingers."
Tyrion put down the candle, took a hand in his, and pulled her gently to him. She bent to kiss him. Her mouth tasted of honey and cloves, and her fingers were deft and practiced as they found the fastening of his clothes. When he entered her, she welcomed him with whispered endearments and small, shuddering gasps of pleasure. Tyrion suspected her delight was feigned, but she did it so well that it did not matter. That much truth he did not crave. He had needed her, Tyrion realized afterwards, as she lay quietly in his arms. Her, or someone like her. It had been nigh on a year since he had lain with a woman, since before he had set out for Winterfell in company with his brother and King Robert. He could well die on the morrow or the day after, and if he did, he would sooner go to his grave thinking of Shay than of his lord father, Lysa Aaron, or Lady Catelyn Stark. He could feel the softness of her breasts pressed against his arm as she lay beside him. That was a good feeling. A song filled his head. Softly, quietly, he began to whistle.
"What's that, my lord?"
Shay murmured against him.
"Oh, nothing," he told her. "A song I learned as a boy, that's all. Go to sleep, sweetling."
When her eyes were closed, and her breathing deep and steady, Tyrion slid out from beneath her, gently, so as not to disturb her sleep. Naked, he crawled outside, stepped over his squire, and walked around behind his tent to make water. Bronn was seated cross-legged under a chestnut tree, near where they'd tied the horses. He was honing the edge of his sword, wide awake. The sellsword did not seem to sleep like other men.
"Where did you find her?"
Tyrion asked him as he pissed. "I took her for him a night. The man was loath to give her up. But your name changed his thinking somewhat. That, and my dirk at his throat."
"Oh, splendid," Tyrion said dryly, shaking off the last drops. "I seem to recall saying, find me a whore, not make me an enemy."
"The pretty ones were all claimed," Bronn said. "I'll be pleased to take her back if you prefer a toothless drab." Tyrion limped closer to where he sat.
"My lord father would call that insolence, and send you to the mines for impertinence."
"Well, good for me, you're not your father," Bronn replied. "I saw one with boils all over her nose. Would you like her?"
"What, and break your heart?"
Tyrion shot back.
"I shall keep Shay. Did you perchance note the name of this knight you took her from? I'd rather not have him beside me in the battle."
Bronn rose, cat quick and cat graceful, turning his sword in his hand. "You'll have me beside you in the battle, dwarf." Tyrion nodded. The night air was warm on his bare skin.
"See that I survive this battle, and you can name your reward."
Bronn tossed the longsword from his right hand to his left and tried a cut.
"Who'd want to kill the likes of you?"
"My lord father, for one. He's put me in the van."
"I'd do the same. A small man with a big shield. You'll give the archers fits." "I find you oddly cheering," Tyrion said. "I must be mad."
Bronn sheathed his sword.
"Beyond a doubt."
When Tyrion returned to his tent, Shay rolled onto her elbow and murmured sleepily,
"I woke, and my lord was gone."
"My lord is back now," he slid in beside her. Her hand went between his stunted legs and found him hard.
"Yes, he is,"
she whispered, stroking him. He asked her about the man Bronn had taken her from, and she named the minor retainer of an insignificant lordling.
"You need not fear his life, my lord,"
the girl said, her fingers busy at his cock.
"He is a small man."
"And what am I, pray?" Tyrion asked her. "A giant?"
"Oh, yes," she purred. "My giant of Lannister."
She mounted him then, and for a time she almost made him believe it. Tyrion went to sleep, smiling, and woke in the darkness to a blare of trumpets. Shay was shaking him by the shoulder.
"My lord," she whispered, "wake up, my lord. I'm frightened."
Groggy, he sat up and threw back the blankets. The horns called through the night, wild and urgent, a cry that said, "Hurry, hurry, hurry!" He heard shouts, the clatter of spears, the whicker of horses, though nothing yet that spoke to him of fighting. "My lord father's trumpets," he said, "battle assembly! I thought Stark was yet a day's march away." Shay shook her head, lost. Her eyes were wide and white. Groaning, Tyrion lurched to his feet and pushed his way outside, shouting for his squire. Wisps of pale fog drifted through the night, long white fingers off the river. Men and horses blundered through the pre-dawn chill. Saddles were being cinched, wagons loaded, fires extinguished. The trumpets blew again. "Hurry, hurry, hurry!" Knights vaulted onto snorting coursers while men-at-arms buckled their sword belts as they ran. When he found Pod, the boy was snoring softly. Tyrion gave him a sharp poke in the ribs with his toe. "My armor," he said, "and be quick about it." Bronn came trotting out of the mists, already armored on a horse, wearing his battered half helm. "Do you know what's happened?" Tyrion asked him. "The Stark boy stole a march on us," Bronn said. "He crept down the King's Road in the night, and now his host is less than a mile north of here, forming up in battle array." "Hurry!" the trumpets called. "Hurry! Hurry! Hurry!" "See that the clansmen are ready to ride." Tyrion ducked back inside his tent. "Where are my clothes?" he barked at Shay. "There! No, the leather, damn it! Yes, bring me my boots." By the time he was dressed, his squire had laid out his armour, such as it was. Tyrion owned a fine suit of heavy plate, expertly crafted to fit his misshapen body. Alas, it was safe at Casterly Rock, and he was not. He had to make do with oddments assembled from Lord Lefford's wagons, mail hauberk and coif, a dead knight's gorget, lobster's greaves and gauntlets, and pointed steel boots. Some of it was ornate, some plain, not a bit of it matched, or fit as it should. His breastplate was meant for a bigger man. For his oversized head, they found a huge, bucket-shaped great helm, topped with a foot-long triangular spike. Shay helped Pud with the buckles and clasps. "If I die, weep for me," Tyrion told the whore. "How will you know you'll be dead?" "I'll know." "I believe you would." Shay lowered the great helm down over his head, and Pod fastened it to his gorget. Tyrion buckled on his belt, heavy with the weight of a short sword and dirk. By then his groom had brought up his mount, a formidable brown courser, armoured as heavily as he was. He needed help to mount. He felt as though he weighed 1,000 stone. Pod handed him up his shield, a massive slab of heavy ironwood banded with steel. Lastly, they gave him his battle-axe. Shay stepped back and looked him over.
"My lord looks fearsome." "My lord looks a dwarf in mismatched armour," Tyrion answered sourly. "But I thank you for your kindness. Podrick, should the battle go against us, see the lady safely home."
He saluted her with his axe, wheeled his horse about, and trotted off. His stomach was a hard knot, so tight it pained him. Behind, his servants hurriedly began to strike his tent. Pale crimson fingers fanned out to the east as the first rays of the sun broke over the horizon. The western sky was a deep purple, speckled with stars. Tyrion wondered whether this was the last sunrise he would ever see, and whether wandering was a mark of cowardice. Did his brother Jaime ever contemplate death before a battle? A war horn sounded in the far distance, a deep, mournful note that chilled the soul. The clansmen climbed onto their scrawny mountain horses, shouting curses and rude jokes. Several appeared to be drunk. The rising sun was burning off the drifting tendrils of fog as Tyrion led them off. But grass the horses had left was heavy with dew, as if some passing guard had scattered a bag of diamonds over the earth. The mountain men fell in behind him, each clan arrayed behind its own leaders. In the dawn light, the army of Lord Tywin Lannister unfolded like an iron rose, thorns gleaming. His uncle would lead the centre. Sir Kevin had raised the standards above the King's Road. Quivers hanging from their belts, the foot archers arrayed themselves into three long lines to east and west of the road and stood calmly stringing their bows. Between them, pikemen formed squares. Behind were rank on rank of men-at-arms with spear and sword and axe. 300 heavy horse surrounded Sir Kevin, and the Lord's bannermen, Lefford, Lydon, and Serret, with all their sworn retainers. The right wing was all cavalry, some 4,000 men, heavy with the weight of their armour. More than three-quarters of the knights were there, massed together like a great steel fist. Sir Adam Marbrand had the command. Tyrion saw his banner unfurl as his standard-bearer shook it out, a burning tree, orange and smoke. Behind him flew Sir Flemon's purple unicorn, the brindled boar of Craighall, the bantam rooster of Swift, and more. His lord father took his place on the hill, where he had slept. Around him the reserve assembled, a huge force, half-mounted and half-foot, 5,000 strong. Lord Tywin almost always chose to command the reserve. He would take the high ground and watch the battle unfold below him, committing his forces when and where they were needed most. Even from afar, his lord father was resplendent. Tywin Lannister's battle armour put his son Jaime's gilded suit to shame. His great cloak was sewn with countless layers of cloth of gold, so heavy that it barely stirred even when he charged, so large that its drape covered most of his stallion's hindquarters when he took the saddle. No ordinary class would suffice for such a weight, so the great cloak was held in place by a matched pair of miniature lionesses crouching on his shoulders as if poised to spring. Their mate, a male with a magnificent mane, reclined atop Lord Tywin's great helm, one paw raking the air as he roared. All three lions were wrought in gold, with ruby eyes. His armour was heavy steel plate, enamelled in a dark crimson, greaves and gauntlets inlaid with ornate gold scrollwork. His rondels were golden sunbursts, all his fastenings were gilded, and the red steel was burnished to such a high sheen that it shone like fire in the light of the rising sun. Tyrion could hear the rumble of the foeman's drums now. He remembered Robb Stark, as he had last seen him, in his father's high seat in the great hall of Winterfell, a sword naked and shining in his hands. He remembered how the direwolves had come at him out of the shadows, and suddenly he could see them again, snarling and snapping, teeth bared in his face. Would the boy bring his wolves to war with him? The thought made him uneasy. The Northerners would be exhausted after their long, sleepless march. Tyrion wondered what the boy had been thinking. Did he think to take them unawares while they slept? Small chance of that. Whatever else might be said of him, Tywin Lannister was no man's fool. The van was massing on the left. He saw the standard first, three black dogs on a yellow field. Sir Gregor sat beneath it, mounted on the biggest horse Tyrion had ever seen. Bronn took one look at him and grinned. "Always follow a big man into battle." Tyrion threw him a hard look. "And why is that?" "They make such splendid targets. That one, he'll draw the eyes of every bowman on the field." Laughing, Tyrion regarded the mountain with fresh eyes. "I confess I had not considered it in that light." Clegane had no splendour about him. His armour was steel plate, dull grey, scarred by hard use, and showing neither sigil nor ornament. He was pointing men into position with his blade, a two-handed greatsword that Sir Gregor waved about with one hand, as a lesser man might wave a dagger. "Any man wants, I'll cut him down myself," he was roaring when he caught sight of Tyrion. "Imp, take the left, or the river, if you can." The left of the left. To turn their flank, the Starks would need horses that could run on water. Tyrion led his men toward the riverbank. "Look," he shouted, pointing his axe, "the river!" A blanket of pale mist still clung to the surface of the water. The murky green current swirled past underneath. The shadows were muddy and choked with reeds. "That river is ours. Whatever happens, keep close to the water. Never lose sight of it. Let no enemy come between us and our river. If they dirty our waters, hack off their cocks and feed them to the fishes." Shagger had an axe in either hand. He smashed them together and made them ring. "Half man!" he shouted. Other stone crows picked up the cry, and the Black Ears, and Moon Brothers as well. The burned men did not shout, but they rattled their swords and spears. "Half man! Half man! Half man!" Tyrion turned his courser in a circle to look over the field. The ground was rolling and uneven here, soft and muddy near the river, rising in a gentle slope toward the King's Road, stony and broken beyond it to the east. A few trees spotted the hillsides, but most of the land had been cleared and planted. His heart pounded in his chest in time to the drums, and under his layers of leather and steel, his brow was cold with sweat. He watched Sir Gregor as the mountain rode up and down the line, shouting and gesticulating. This wing was all cavalry, but where the right was, a mailed fist of knights and heavy lances, the vanguard was made up of the sweepings of the west. Mounted archers in leather jerkins, a swarming mass of undisciplined free riders and sellswords. Field hands on plough horses, armed with scythes and their fathers' rusted swords. Half-trained boys from the stews of Lannisport, and Tyrion and his mountain clansmen. "Crow food," Bronn muttered beside him, giving voice to what Tyrion had left unsaid. He could only nod. Had his lord father taken leave of his senses? No pikes? Too few bowmen? A bare handful of knights? The ill-armed and unarmored, commanded by an unthinking brute who led with his rage? How could his father expect this travesty of a battle to hold his left? He had no time to think about it. The drums were so near that the beat crept under his skin and set his hands to twitching. Bronn drew his longsword, and suddenly the enemy was there before them, boiling over the tops of the hills, advancing with measured tread behind a wall of shields and pikes.
"Gods be damned, look at them all,"
Tyrion thought, though he knew his father had more men on the field. Their captains led them on armoured war horses, standard bearers riding alongside with their banners. He glimpsed the bull moose of the Hornwoods, the Karstark sunburst, Lord Serwyn's battle axe, and the mail fist of the Glovers, and the twin towers of Frey, blue and grey. So much for his father's certainty that Lord Walder would not bestir himself. The white of House Stark was seen everywhere, The grey direwolf seemed to run and leap as the banner swirled and streamed from the high staffs.
"Where is the boy?"
Tyrion wondered. A war horn blew.
"Haroo!"
it cried, its voice as long and low and chilling as a cold wind from the north. The Lannisters' trumpets answered,
"Da-da! Da-da! Da-da!"
brazen and defiant. Yet it seemed to Tyrion that they sounded somehow smaller, more anxious. He could feel a fluttering in his bowels, a queasy, liquid feeling. He hoped he was not going to die sick. As the horns died away, a hissing filled the air. A vast flight of arrows arched up from his right, where the archers stood flanking the road. The Northerners broke into a run, shouting as they came, but the Lannisters' arrows fell on them like hail, hundreds of arrows, thousands, and shouts turned to screams as men stumbled and went down. By then a second flight was in the air, and the archers were fitting a third arrow to their bowstrings. The trumpets blared again,
"Da-da! Da-da! 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 Da-da!"
Sir Gregor waved his huge sword and bellowed a command, and a thousand other voices screamed back at him. Tyrion put his spurs to his horse and added one more voice to the cacophony, and the van surged forward. "The river!" he shouted at his clansmen as they rode. "Remember, hew to the river!" He was still leading when they broke a canter, until Chela gave a blood-curling shriek and galloped past him, and Shagga howled and followed. The clansmen charged after them, leaving Tyrion in their dust. A crescent of enemy spearmen had formed ahead, a double hedgehog bristling with steel, waiting behind tall oaken shields marked with a sunburst of Karstark. Gregor Clegane was the first to reach them, leading a wedge of armoured veterans. Half the horses shied at the last second, breaking their charge before the rows of spears. The others died, sharp steel points ripping through their chests. Tyrion saw a dozen men go down. The mountain stallion reared, lashing out with iron-shod hoofs as a barbed spearhead raked across his neck. Maddened, the beast lunged into the ranks. Spears thrust at him from every side, but the shield wall broke beneath his weight. The Northerner stumbled away from the animal's death throes. As his horse fell, snorting blood and biting with his last red breath, the mountain rose untouched, laying about him with his two-handed greatsword. Shagga went bursting through the gap before the shields could close, other stone crows hard behind him. Tyrion shouted, "Burn men! Moon brothers! After me!" But most of them were ahead of him. He glimpsed Timmit, son of Timmit, vault free, as his mount died under him in full stride. Saw a moon brother impaled on a Karstark spear. Watched Conn's horse shatter a man's ribs with a kick. A flight of arrows descended on them. Where they came from, he could not say, but they fell on Stark and Lannister alike, rattling off armour or finding flesh. Tyrion lifted his shield and hid beneath it. The hedgehog was crumbling, the Northerners reeling back under the impact of the mounted assault. Tyrion saw Shagga catch a spearman full in the chest as the fool came on at a run, saw his axe shear through the mail and leather and muscle and lungs. The man was dead on his feet. The axe head lodged in his breast. Yet Shagga rode on, cleaving a shield in two with his left-handed battle-axe, while the corpse was bouncing and stumbling bonelessly along on his right. Finally, the dead man slid off. Shagga smashed the two axes together and roared. By then the enemy was on him, and Tyrion's battle shrunk to the few feet of ground around his horse. A man-at-arms thrust at his chest, and his axe lashed out, knocking the spear aside. The man danced back for another try, but Tyrion spurred his horse and rode right over him. Bronn was surrounded by three foes, but he lopped the head off the first spear that came at him and raked his blade across the second man's face on its backslash. A thrown spear came hurtling at Tyrion from the left, and lodged in his shield with a woody clunk. He wheeled and raced after the thrower, but the man raised his own shield over his head. Tyrion circled around him, raining axe blows down on the wood. Chips of oak went flying until the northerner lost his feet and slipped, falling flat on his back with his shield on top of him. He was below the reach of Tyrion's axe, and it was too much bother to dismount. So he left him there and rode after another man, taking him from behind with a sweeping downcut that sent a jolt of impact up his arm. That won him a moment's respite. Reining up, he looked for the river. There it was, off to the right. Somehow he had gotten turned around. A burned man rode past, slumped against his horse. A spear had entered his belly and come out through his back. He was past any help, but when Tyrion saw one of the northerners run up and make a grab for his reins, he charged. His quarry met him sword in hand. He was tall and spare, wearing a long chainmail hauberk and gauntlets of lobster steel. But he'd lost his helm, and blood ran down into his eyes from a gash across his forehead. Tyrion aimed a swipe at his face, but the tall man slammed it aside. "Dwarf!" he screamed. "Die!" He turned in a circle as Tyrion rode around him, hacking at his head and shoulders. Steel rang on steel, and Tyrion soon realized that the tall man was quicker and stronger than he was. Where in the seven hells was Bronn? "Die!" the man grunted, chopping at him savagely. Tyrion barely got his shield up in time, and the wood seemed to explode inward under the force of the blow. The shattered pieces fell away from his arm. "Die!" the swordsman bellowed, shoving in close and wanging Tyrion across the temple so hard his head rang. The blade made a hideous scraping sound as he drew it back over the steel. The tall man grinned, until Tyrion's destrier bit, quick as a snake, laying his cheek bare to the bone. Then he screamed. Tyrion buried his axe into his head. "You die," he told him, and he did. As he wrenched the blade free, he heard a shout. "Eddard!" A voice rang out. "For Eddard and Winterfell!" The knight came thundering down on him, swinging the spiked ball of a morning star around his head. Their war horses slammed together before Tyrion could so much as open his mouth to shout for Bronn. His right elbow exploded with pain as the spikes punched through the thin metal around the joint. His axe was gone, as fast as that. He clawed for his sword, but the morning star was circling again, coming at his face. A sickening crunch, and he was falling. He did not recall hitting the ground, but when he looked up, there was only sky above him. He rolled onto his side and tried to find his feet, but pain shuddered through him, and the world throbbed. The knight who had felled him drew up above him. "Tyrion the imp," he boomed down, "you're mine. Do ye yield, Lannister?" "Yes," Tyrion thought, but the word caught in his throat. He made a croaking sound and fought his way to his knees, fumbling for a weapon. His sword, his dirk, anything. "Do ye yield?" The knight loomed overhead on his armored warhorse. Man and horse both seemed immense. The spike boar swung in a lazy circle. Tyrion's hands were numb, his vision blurred, his scabbard empty. "Yield or die," the knight declared, his flail whirling faster and faster. Tyrion lurched to his feet, driving his head into the horse's belly. The animal gave a hideous scream and reared. It tried to twist away from the agony. A shower of blood and viscera poured down over Tyrion's face, and the horse fell like an avalanche. The next thing he knew, his visor was packed with mud, and something was crushing his foot. He wriggled free, his throat so tight he could scarcely talk. "Yield!"
he managed to croak faintly. "Yes," a voice moaned, thick with pain. Tyrion scraped the mud off his helm so he could see again. The horse had fallen away from him onto its rider. The knight's leg was trapped. The arm he'd used to break his fall twisted at a grotesque angle. "Yield," he repeated. Fumbling at his belt with his good hand, he drew a sword and flung it at Tyrion's feet.
"I yield, my lord."
Dazed, the dwarf knelt and lifted the blade. Pain hammered through his elbow when he moved his arm. The battle seemed to move beyond him. No one remained on his part of the field, save a large number of corpses. Ravens were already circling and landing to feed. He saw that Sir Kevin had brought up his centre in support of the Vern. His huge mass of pikemen had pushed the northerners back against the hills. They were struggling on the slopes, pikes thrusting against another wall of shields, these oval and reinforced with iron studs. As he watched, the air filled with arrows again, and the men behind the oak wall crumbled beneath the murderous fire.
"I believe you are losing, sir," he told the knight under the horse.
The man made no reply. The sound of hoofs coming up behind him made him whirl, although he could scarcely lift the sword he held for the agony in his elbow. Brunn reined up and looked down on him.
"Small use you turned out to be," Tyrion told him.
"It would seem you did well enough on your own," Brunn answered. "You've lost a spike off your helm, though." Tyrion groped at the top of the great helm. The spike had snapped off clean.
"I haven't lost it. I know just where it is. Did you see my horse?"
By the time they found it, the trumpets had sounded again, and Lord Tywin's reserve came sweeping along the river. Tyrion watched his father fly past, the crimson and gold banner of Lannister rippling over his head as he thundered across the field. 500 knights surrounded him, sunlight flashing off the points of their lances. The remnants of the Stark lions shattered like glass beneath the hammer of their charge. With his elbow swollen and throbbing inside his armour, Tyrion made no attempt to join the slaughter. He and Bronn went looking for his men. Many he found among the dead. Alf, son of Uma, lay in a pool of congealing blood, his arm gone at the elbow. A dozen of his moon brothers sprawled around him. Shagga was slumped beneath a tree, riddled with arrows, Conn's head in his lap. Tyrion thought they were both dead, but as he dismounted, Shagga opened his eyes and said,
"They have killed Conn, son of Carat."
Handsome Conn had no mark but for the red stain over his breast, where the spear thrust had killed him. When Brunn pulled Shagga to his feet, the big man seemed to notice the arrows for the first time. He plucked them out, one by one, cursing the holes they had made in his layers of mail and leather, and yowling like a babe at the few that had buried themselves in his flesh. Chella, daughter of Cheik, rode up as they were yanking arrows out of Shagga, and showed them 4 ears she had taken. Timmet, they discovered, looting the bodies of the slain with his burned men. Of the 300 clansmen who had ridden to battle behind Tyrion Lannister, perhaps half had survived. He left the living to look after the dead, sent Bronn to take charge of his captive knight, and went alone in search of his father. Lord Tywin was seated by the river, sipping wine from a jeweled cup as his squire undid the fastenings on his breastplate.
"A fine victory," Sir Kevin said when he saw Tyrion. "Your wild men fought well."
His father's eyes were on him, pale green flecked with gold, so cool they gave Tyrion a chill.
"Did that surprise you, father?" he asked. "Did it upset your plans? We were supposed to be butchered, were we not?"
Lord Tywin drained his cup, his face expressionless.
I put the least disciplined men on the left, yes. I anticipated they would break. Rob Stark is a green boy, more like to be brave than wise. I hoped that if he saw our left collapse, he might plunge into the gap, eager for a rout. Once he was fully committed, Sir Kevin's pikes would wheel and take him in the flank, driving him into the river while I brought up the reserve. And you thought it best to place me in the midst of this carnage, yet keep me ignorant of your plans. A fine rout is less convincing, his father said, and I am not inclined to trust my plans to a man who consorts with sellswords and savages. A pity my savages ruined your dance. Tyrion pulled off his steel gauntlet and let it fall to the ground, wincing at the pain that stabbed up his arm. The Stark boy proved more cautious than I expected for one of his years, Lord Tywin admitted. But a victory is a victory. You appear to be wounded. Tyrion's right arm was soaked with blood. Good of you to notice, father, he said through clenched teeth. Might I trouble you to send for your maesters, unless you relish the notion of having a one-armed dwarf for a son? An urgent shout of, Lord Tywin, turned his father's head before he could reply. Tywin Lannister rose to his feet as Sir Adam Marbrant leapt down off his courser. The horse was lathered and bleeding from the mouth. Sir Adam dropped to one knee, a rangy man with dark copper hair that fell to his shoulders, armoured in burnished bronze steel, with a fiery tree of his house etched black on his breastplate.
My liege, we have taken some of their commanders. Lord Serwyn, Sir Willis Manderley, Harry and Carstark, four Freys, Lord Ormwood is dead, and I fear Roos Bolton has escaped us. And the boy?
Lord Tywin asked. Sir Adam hesitated.
The Stark boy was not with them, my lord. They say he crossed at the Twins with a great part of his horse, riding hard for River Run.
A green boy, Tyrion remembered, more like to be brave than wise. He would have laughed, if he hadn't hurt so much. Catelyn. The woods were full of whispers. Moonlight winked on the tumbling waters of the stream below as it wound its rocky way along the floor of the valley. Beneath the trees, war horses whickered softly and pawed at the moist, leafy ground, while men made nervous jests in hushed voices. Now and again she heard the chink of spears, the faint metallic slither of chain mail, but even those sounds were muffled.
It should not be long now, milady,
Hadas Mollin said. He had asked for the honour of protecting her in the battle to come. It was his right, as Winterfell's captain of guards, and Rob had not refused it to him. She had 30 men around her, charged to keep her unharmed and see her safely home to Winterfell if the fighting went against them. Rob had wanted 50. Catelyn had insisted that 10 would be enough, that he would need every sword for the fight. They made their peace at 30, neither happy with it. It will come when it comes, Catelyn told him. When it came, she knew it would mean death. Hal's death, perhaps, or hers, or Rob's. No one was safe. No life was certain. Catelyn was content to wait, to listen to the whispers in the woods and the faint music of the brook, to feel the warm wind in her hair. She was no stranger to waiting, after all. Her men had always made her wait.
Watch for me, little cat,
her father would always tell her when he rode off to court or fair or battle, and she would, standing patiently on the battlements of River Run as the waters of the Red Fork and the Tumblestone flowed by. He did not always come when he said he would, and days would oftentimes pass as Catelyn stood her vigil, peering out between crenels and through arrow loops, until she caught a glimpse of Lord Huster and his old brown gelding trotting along the river shore towards the landing.
"Did you watch for me?"
he asked when he bent to hug her.
"Did you, little cat?"
Brandon Stark had bid her wait as well. "I shall not be long, my lady," he had vowed. "We will be wed on my return." Yet when the day came at last, it was his brother Eddard who stood beside her in the sept. Ned had lingered scarcely a fortnight with his new bride before he, too, had ridden off to war, with promises on his lips. At least he had left her with more than words. He had given her a son. 9 moons had waxed and waned, and Rob had been born in River Run while his father still warred in the south. She had brought him forth in blood and pain, not knowing whether Ned would ever see him. Her son. He had been so small. And now it was Rob she waited for. For Rob and for Jaime Lannister, the gilded knight, who men said had never learned to wait at all.
"The Kingslayer is restless and quick to anger," her uncle Brynden had told Rob,
and he had wagered their lives and their best hope of victory on the truth of what he said. If Rob was frightened, he gave no sign of it. Catelyn watched her son as he moved among the men, touching one on the shoulder, sharing a jest with another, helping a third to gentle an anxious horse. His armour clinked softly when he moved. Only his head was bare. Catelyn watched a breeze stir his auburn hair, so like her own, and wondered when her son had grown so big. 15, and near as tall as she was.
"Let him grow taller," she asked the guards. "Let him know 16 and 20 and 50. Let him grow as tall as his father and hold his own son in his arms. Please, please, please."
As she watched him, this tall young man with a new beard and the direwolf prowling at his heels, all she could see was the babe they had laid at her breast at River Run so long ago. The night was warm, but the thought of River Run was enough to make her shiver.
Where are they? She wondered.
Could her uncle have been wrong? So much rested on the truth of what he had told them. Rob had given the Blackfish 300 picked men and sent them ahead to screen his march.
"Jaime does not know," Sir Brynden said when he rode back. "I'll stake my life on that. No bird has reached him. My archers have seen to that. We've seen a few of his outriders, but those that saw us did not live to tell of it. He ought to have sent out more. He does not know."
"How large is his host?" her son asked.
12,000 foot, scattered round the castle, in 3 separate camps, with the rivers between," her uncle said, with a craggy smile she remembered so well. "There's no other way to besiege River Run, yet still that will be their undoing. 2,000 or 3,000 horse."
"The Kingslayer has us 3 to 1, said Galbert Glover.
"True enough," Sir Brynden said. "Yet there is one thing Sir Jaime lacks."
"Yes," Rob asked.
"Patience."
Their host was greater than it had been when they left the Twins. Lord Jason Mallister had brought his power out from Seaguard to join them as they swept around the headwaters of the Blue Fork and galloped south, and others had crept forth as well. Hedge knights and small lords and masterless men-at-arms who had fled north when her brother Edmure's army was shattered beneath the walls of River Run. They had driven their horses as hard as they dared to reach this place before Jaime Lannister had word of their coming. And now the hour was at hand. Catelyn watched her son mount up. Oliver Frey held his horse for him, Lord Walder's son, 2 years older than Rob, and 10 years younger and more anxious. He strapped Rob's shield in place and handed up his helm. When he lowered it over the face she loved so well, a tall young knight sat on his grey stallion where her son had been. It was dark among the trees, where the moon did not reach. When Rob turned his head to look at her, she could see only black inside his visor. "I must ride down the line, Mother," he told her. "Father says you should let the men see you before a battle." "Go then," she said. "Let them see you." "It will give them courage," Rob said. "And who will give me courage?" she wondered. Yet she kept her silence and made herself smile for him. Rob turned the big grey stallion and walked him slowly away from her, grey wind shadowing his steps. Behind him, his battle guard formed up. When he'd forced Catelyn to accept her protectors, she had insisted that he be guarded as well, and the Lord's bannermen had agreed. Many of their sons had clamoured for the honour of riding with the young wolf, as they had taken to calling him. Torrin Carstark and his brother Eddard were among his 30, and Patrick Mallister, Small John Umber, Darren Hornwood, Theon Greyjoy, no less than 5 of Walder Frey's vast brood, along with older men like Sir Wendell Manderley and Robin Flint. One of his companions was even a woman, Daisy Mormont, Lady Major's eldest daughter, and heir to Bear Island, a lanky 6-footer who had been given a morning star at the age when most girls were given dolls. Some of the other lords muttered about that, but Catelyn would not listen to their complaints. "This is not about the honour of your houses," she told them. "This is about keeping my son alive and whole." And if it comes to that, she wondered, will 30 be enough? Will 6,000 be enough? A bird called faintly in the distance, a high, sharp trill that felt like an icy hand on Catelyn's neck. Another bird answered, a third, a fourth. She knew their call well enough from her years at Winterfell. Snow shrikes. Sometimes you saw them in the deep of winter when the Godswood was white and still. They were northern birds. "They are coming," Catelyn thought.
"They're coming, me lady,"
Hal Mullen whispered. He was always a man for stating the obvious.
"Gods be with us."
She nodded as the woods grew still around them. In the quiet she could hear them, far off yet moving closer, the tread of many horses, the rattle of swords and spears and armour, the murmur of human voices, with here a laugh and there a curse. Ian seemed to come and go. The sounds grew louder. She heard more laughter, a shouted command, splashing as they crossed and recrossed the little stream. A horse snorted, a man swore, and then at last she saw him. Only for an instant, framed between the branches of the trees as she looked down at the valley floor, yet she knew it was him. Even at this distance, Sir Jaime Lannister was unmistakable. The moonlight had silvered his armour and the gold of his hair, and turned his crimson cloak to black. He was not wearing a helm. He was there, and he was gone again, his silvery armour obscured by the trees once more. Others came behind him, long columns of them, knights and sworn swords and free riders, 3/4 of the Lannister horse. "He is no man for sitting in a tent while his carpenters build siege towers," Sir Brynden had promised. "He has ridden out with his knights 2 already to chase down raiders or storm a stubborn holdfast." Nodding, Rob had studied the map her uncle had drawn him. Ned had taught him how to read maps. "Raid him here," he said, pointing. "A 200 men, no more. Tully banners. When he comes after you, we will be waiting." His finger moved 1 inch to the left. "Here." Here was a hush in the night, moonlight and shadows, a thick carpet of dead leaves underfoot, densely wooded ridges sloping gently down to the stream bed, the underbrush thinning as the ground fell away. Here was her son on the stallion, glancing back at her 1 last time and lifting his sword in salute. Here was the call of Maege Mormont's war horn, a long, low blast that rolled down the valley from the east to tell them that the last of Jaime's riders had entered the trap. And Grey Wind threw back his head and howled. The sound seemed to go right through Catelyn Stark, and she found herself shivering. It was a terrible sound, a frightening sound. Yet there was music in it, too. For a second, she felt something like pity for the Lannisters below. "So this is what death sounds like," she thought. "Haroo!" came the answer from the far ridge, as the great John winded his own horn. To east and west, the trumpets of the Malisters and Freys blew vengeance. North, where the valley narrowed and bent like a cocked elbow, Lord Carstark's war horns added their own deep, mournful voices to the dark chorus. Men were shouting and horses rearing in the stream below. The whispering wood let out its breath all at once, as the bowmen Rob had hidden in the branches of the trees let fly their arrows, and the night erupted with the screams of men and horses. All around her, the riders raised their lances, and the dirt and leaves that had buried the cruel bright points fell away to reveal the gleam of sharpened steel. "Winterfell!" she heard Rob shout as the arrow sighed again. He moved away from her at a trot, leading his men downhill. Catelyn sat on her horse, unmoving, with Hal Mullen and her guard around her, and she waited as she had waited before, for Brandon and Ned and her father. She was high on the ridge, and the trees hid most of what was going on beneath her. A heartbeat, two, four, and suddenly it was as if she and her protectors were alone in the wood. The rest were melted away into the green. Yet when she looked across the valley to the far ridge, she saw the great John's riders emerge from the darkness beneath the trees. They were in a long line, an endless line, and as they burst from the wood, there was an instant, the smallest part of a heartbeat, but all Catelyn saw was the moonlight on the points of their lances, as if a thousand will-o'-wisps were coming down the ridge, wreathed in silver flame. Then she blinked, and they were only men, rushing down to kill or die. Afterward, she could not claim she had seen the battle, yet she could hear, and the valley rang with echoes. The crack of a broken lance, the clash of swords, the cries of "Lannister!" and "Winterfell!" and "Tully! River Run and Tully!" When she realized there was no more to see, she closed her eyes and listened. The battle came alive around her. She heard hoofbeats, iron boots splashing in shallow water, the woody sound of swords on oaken shields, and the scrape of steel against steel, the hiss of arrows, the thunder of drums, the terrified screaming of a thousand horses. Men shouted curses and begged for mercy, and got it or not, and lived or died. The ridges seemed to play queer tricks with sound. Once she heard Rob's voice, as clear as if he'd been standing at her side, calling, "To me! To me!" And she heard his direwolf snarling and growling, heard the snap of those long teeth, the tearing of flesh, shrieks of fear and pain for man and horse alike. Was there only one wolf? It was hard to be certain. Little by little, the sounds dwindled and died, until at last there was only the wolf. As a red dawn broke in the east, grey wind began to howl again. Rob came back to her on a different horse, riding a piebald gelding in the place of the grey stallion he had taken down into the valley. The wolf's head and his shield were slashed half to pieces, raw wood showing where deep gouges had been hacked in the oak. But Rob himself seemed unhurt. Yet when he came closer, Catelyn saw that his mail glove and the sleeve of his surcoat were black with blood. "You're hurt," she said. Rob lifted his hand, opened, and closed his fingers. "No," he said, "this is Tarrin's blood, perhaps, or..." He shook his head. "I do not know." A mob of men followed him up the slope, dirty and dented and grinning, with Theon and the great John at their head. Between them, they dragged Sir Jaime Lannister, They threw him down in front of her horse. "The Kingslayer," Hal announced, unnecessarily. Lannister raised his head. "Lady Stark," he said from his knees. Blood ran down one cheek from a gash across his scalp, but the pale light of dawn had put the glint of gold back in his hair. "I would offer you my sword, but I seem to have mislaid it." "It is not your sword I want, sir," she told him. "Give me my father and my brother Edmure. Give me my daughters. Give me my lord husband." "I have mislaid them as well, I fear." "A pity," Catelyn said coldly. "Kill him, Rob," Theon Greyjoy urged. "Take his head off." "No," her son answered, peeling off his bloody glove. "He's more use alive than dead, and my lord father never condoned the murder of prisoners after a battle." "A wise man," Jaime Lannister said, "and honourable." "Take him away and put him in irons," Catelyn said. "Do as my lady mother says," Rob commanded, "and make certain there's a strong guard around him. Lord Carstark will want his head on a pike."
"That he will,"
the Grey John agreed, gesturing. Lannister was led away to be bandaged and chained. "Why should Lord Carstark want him dead?" Catelyn asked. Rob looked away into the woods with the same brooding look that Ned often got. He killed them. "Lord Carstark's sons," Galbert Glover explained. "Both of them," Rob said. "Torrhen and Eddard. And Darren Hornwood as well." "No one can fault Lannister on his courage," Glover said. "When he saw that he was lost, he rallied his retainers and fought his way up the valley, hoping to reach Lord Rob and cut him down. And almost did." "He mislaid his sword in Eddard Carstark's neck after he took Torrhen's hand off and split Darren Hornwood's skull open," Rob said. "All the time he was shouting for me. If they hadn't tried to stop him, I should then be mourning in place of Lord Carstark," Catelyn said. "Your men did what they were sworn to do, Rob. They died protecting their liege lord. Grieve for them. Honour them for their valour. But not now. You have no time for grief. You may have lopped off the head of the snake, but three quarters of the body is still coiled around my father's castle. We have won a battle, not a war."
"But such a battle," said Theon Greyjoy eagerly. "My lady, the realm has not seen such a victory since a field of fire. I vow the Lannisters lost 10 men for every one of ours that fell. We've taken close to 100 knights captive, and 12 Lords Bannermen, Lord Westerling, Lord Bainfort, Sir Garth Greenfield, Lord Estrin, Sir Titus Brax, Mallow the Dornishman, and 3 Lannisters besides Jaime, Lord Tywin's own nephews, 2 of his sister's sons, and 1 of his dead brothers, and Lord Tywin."
Catelyn interrupted. "Have you perchance taken Lord Tywin, Theon?"
No,
Greyjoy answered, brought up short. "Until you do, this war is far from done." Rob raised his head and pushed his hair back out of his eyes. "My mother is right. We still have River Run." Daenerys. She was breaking her fast on a bowl of cold shrimp and persimmon soup when Eri brought her a Carthian gown, an airy confection of ivory samite patterned with seed pearls. "Take it away," Danny said. "The docks are no place for ladies' finery." If the milkman thought her such a savage, she would dress the part for them. When she went to the stables, she wore faded sand-silk pants and woven grass sandals. Her small breast moved freely beneath a painted Dothraki vest, and a curved dagger hung from her medallion belt. Jiqui had braided her hair Dothraki fashion and fastened a silver bell to the end of the braid. "I have won no victories," she tried telling her handmaid when the bell tinkled softly. Jiqui disagreed.
"You burned the Magi in their house of dust and sent their souls to hell." That was Drogon's victory, not mine, Danny wanted to say, but she held her tongue.